I might have just gotten myself into trouble, but I don't think so. I don't know. I made producer Jay come in here and read what I posted on our Facebook page. I was responding to a question that did not get asked. Kind of surprised that producer Jay didn't ask me this question the air. Anyway, I do go back my point in saying all of that is I don't think that I crossed any lines or that I was offensive in any way. I was very careful in how I phrased my answer, but I do go back and I respond to many of your questions on Twitter or on Facebook separately because I recognize that Jay cannot get to all of them. We specifically limit it to a segment where there's a hard out, meaning we're forced to stop talking at a particular time so that we don't get to all your questions. We save some of the best ones for our video versions of Ask Amy Anything. We'll do another one of those coming up before the fall expires, probably sometime in October, since that's one of my favorite months of the year. So you can always send your questions to our show Twitter, After Hours CBS. Producer Jay keeps track of those. And then on our Facebook page, too, as I say, I'm trying to go back and answer some of them. I knew that I was going to get a sarcastic response or a nasty response about the Cleveland logo, too, because, of course, you can't make any jokes about the Cleveland Browns because fans always get upset. Brian would like us to know it's not a new logo for the Browns. They've had the elf since the 50s with Paul Brown and Jim Brown. I knew that, but it's new on the field. Thank you, Brian. He says Art Modell tried getting rid of the logo back in the late 80s and 90s. Not supposed to strike fear, but bring good luck. Oh, but wait, I missed a part. Not supposed to strike fear, like you sarcastically stated. Wow. I'm telling you, Cleveland fans, some of you are the, you get your panties in a wad and you get more upset about the dumbest stuff. Not all of you, but some of you. You just are defensive so quickly. Brian, thank you for the information. I said it's not my logo. It's not my team. So if the fans like it, good. I'm so glad. And yes, I did know that it's not something new. It's just new on the field. But I appreciate that. You are very kind to set the record straight. Sarcastically stated. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. My gosh. Every single time I talk about Cleveland, someone sends me a message. You hate Cleveland.
We're in Cleveland. Nothing is easy here.
Actually, I think I don't hate Cleveland. A lot of you hate Cleveland, and you're from Cleveland. I actually, my first baseball game I ever attended when I was a kid with my grandpa was in Cleveland. I have fond memories of Cleveland being someone who spent, well, Northeast Ohio is a second home to me. That's where my mom's whole side of the family is from. So pretty familiar with it. My grandparents lived on a street that was half decorated in brown and orange and half decorated in gold and black for the
you
Steelers.
You don't wear brown and orange, you don't matter.
I can imagine that my grandparents would be rolling over in their graves if they'd heard Freddie Kitchens say that. But yeah, pretty familiar with all the traditions. I love Northeast Ohio, I will say that. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Whether you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance yours, Rocket Mortgage can help you get there. For home loan solutions that fit your life, Rocket can. Brian, thank you for listening, too. It's good to hear from you. The Hump Show is nearly at an end for us. We've got 1 hour to go here, but your hump day is just beginning. And once you get through it, Week 2 of the NFL season is on the horizon, so we're going to get to a little bit of that. Actually, as a precursor to that, I saw this information, this so crazy, it's crazy numbers, information about the worth of the top NFL teams and the number of NFL teams that are valued in the top 50 of all pro sports franchises is pretty incredible. So I just want to drop that on you because here we are in week number one in the power of the NFL. It's already flexing its financial muscles, to be sure. And it seems like every time there's controversy or whenever there's a headline that grips us during the offseason that is more off the field than on, it just disappears once we get the games underway. And I'm not saying that's a positive thing. I don't think that the game should be the end all to be all, But that is reality. That is how it goes once the game start. And the NFL commissioner and the owners, they bank on that. They bank on the games themselves, the competition that sucks you in and almost causes everything else to go quiet or to fade away, even an elf on the middle of a field. Oh, see, I couldn't resist. You can find me on Twitter, as Brian did, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. Like I said, I'm very careful. I don't think I offended anyone, but I guess someone will tell me if I did, like Brian did. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS is our phone number. I wanted to give you the update on Albert Pujols. He had a single last night, but he did not have home run number 698. Just saying that is crazy. Home run number 698 will be his next one. We did, however, have home runs from the other guy that we're watching.
Pitch to Judge. Swung on and drilled to deep right field. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. And to the Boston bullpen. A Judgian blast. Now the 1-1. Swung on, there it goes. Deep left field, it is high. It is far. It has gone out of the building. Over the high green monster. Over the monster seats. Out onto Lansbone. He is phenomenal. The second home run of the night for Judge. His 57th of the year. And we're all tied at four. And the 1-1 line. There's a base hit to right center field. In the alley, it'll go all the way to the wall. Three-run score. Floreal scores. It is a bases clearing. Three-run double for Gleyber Torres.
That's John Sterling on Yankees Radio. And just for people who are Red Sox fans or know Fenway Park, it's Lansdowne Street, but you catch his drift. Aaron Judge goes deep in the sixth and the eighth innings. And with his batting average now at .310, he's actually not that far off when it comes to the Triple Crown numbers. Now, I don't know whether or not he'll catch up to the batting leaders and batting titles. Not ever something that you would consider with Aaron Judge, right? But that's why this season is so impressive, because he's not just a home run hitter. He's got all of the tools in his bag. In fact, when I went to Yankee Stadium on Saturday, he had two hits in the first inning. The Yankees batted around. He had two hits in the first inning. Did you know he has got 20 more home runs than the next guy on the list in the majors? That's insane. That's about like the Dodgers with a 20.5 game lead over the Padres, who are a playoff team in the NL West. Aaron Judge with 57 home runs. Kyle Schwarber is next on the list with 37. Even Mike Trout, now he missed a bunch of time, but he did have home runs in seven straight games. He's only, air quotations, he's only got 35. So Judge is sitting on 57 home runs. He already leads the majors with 123 RBI. And then if you consider the American League batting leaders, he's at .310. He's fourth place. 0.009 of a point behind Luis Urias of the Twins. Then you've got Xander Bogaerts. Well, Luis is at .319. You've got Xander Bogaerts at .318, Jose Abreu of the White Sox at .312, and then Aaron Judge. So it's not something I've heard mentioned around Aaron. Nolan Arenado, for sure. No, Paul Goldschmidt. Sorry, Paul Goldschmidt. The two of them are both dynamic for the Cardinals. But Paul Goldschmidt, you're hearing the Triple Crown pursuit with him. But Aaron Judge, that's unheard of. He may very well win the MVP, though there's still a pretty strong push for Shohei Ohtani as well. In fact, CC Sabathia, the former Yankees pitcher, actually went on record Tuesday as saying that he thought it should be Shohei Ohtani and not Aaron Judge who wins the American League MVP. Regardless, those votes are not cast yet, but with his batting average up to .310, he's at least in the conversation for a Triple Crown.
So, judge and jury.
Aaron Judge is now sitting on 57 home runs, but does not want to count the numbers, hear about the numbers, talk about the numbers.
If you're checking the numbers, you're going to get caught. So I just, you know, just keep trying to do what I can do, and, you know, the numbers will take care of themselves. If I have a good plan, have a good approach, do what I need to do in the box, you know. All that other stuff will show up. You know, as a kid, you know, you look up and you see Albert Pujols hitting .330 every year and consistently put up the RBI numbers and stuff like that. So for me, grading the hitter has always been about average. You know, it might be a little old school, but, you know, can you hit or can you hit?
It's kind of like motivation. And just all the guys try to do the same thing. I mean, no homer, because we can't do too many homer like him, but maybe really good at bats and couple singles.
I love what Gleyber Torres has to say. Really, it's the motivation of Aaron Judge. They follow his lead. Not necessarily the home runs, because they don't hit the ball like he does. But Gleyber Torres had the big bat in the 10th inning in Boston last night with the it's a bases clearing double that he had in the 10th inning. And so now, after what was a stretch where they were scuffling to score runs, the Yankees have 27 runs in their last three games. And while the Blue Jays and the Rays split a doubleheader on Tuesday, you've got those teams behind them kind of taking each other out, if that makes sense. So splitting wins is not going to get anybody closer to the Yankees. The Rays were on quite a tear for a while, but then ran into the Blue Jays, who right now are just as hot. And for that reason, they're both from picking up a whole lot of ground in the AL East. So as it stands, the Yankees lead the Blue Jays by six. The Jays have won seven of their last 10. George Springer had a big home run last night. Actually, this is kind of fun. He was busy doing his postgame interview when Vladdy came calling.
I'm just trying to score the guy from second. You know, home runs. A home run's great, but, you know, it's about the team, so I'm just happy to help us win.
On Sportsnet, you can't see the Gatorade bath, but just trust us, he got a bath from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. after that. So the Blue Jays and the Rays, they split. Blue Jays have actually leapfrogged Tampa Bay in the standings. They're at six games out. The Rays are at 6.5. And that's the problem, is you can't split wins. You can't go 50-50 the rest of the way and expect to catch the Yankees more than likely. And I know they've slumped a bit. If I'm not mistaken, they're still below 500 since the All-Star break. But for now, they are protecting that lead atop the American League East. In the National League East, the World Series champions, they're coming again. They're within a half game of the New York Mets. And we've heard this before. We've heard the footfall of the Braves catching up to the Mets. Now, actually, the Mets can feel them breathing down their necks. And so that's also a race to watch. The Dodgers, though, not so much. The NL West, not so much. Keep in mind, there are 3 weeks left in the baseball regular season.
Freeman leading off in the third. Kelly delivers, and Freeman with a shot to right center field. Well hit, and it is gone! A home run! Freddie Freeman into the pool area. The Dodgers may not go for a swim, but that ball will, and the Dodgers take a 3-0 lead. The 1-2, Walker strikes out swinging on a slider down and in, and Walker resembled a corkscrew after that swing. And that's the fifth strikeout of the game for Kershaw, the second out of the fourth. Here's a 2-1, line drive, caught by the second baseman, Taylor. The Dodgers shut out Arizona, and the Dodgers win their ninth division title in the past 10 years. 4-0, they beat Arizona. The Dodgers now 55 games over 500. This is a season that simply has been one of Dodger domination.
It's just a special night, man. You know, I think I said it out there, but just the game itself was kind of like our whole season in a nutshell. You know, Mookie makes an unbelievable play. Trey makes an unbelievable play. We get big homers from Joey, Muncy, Freddie, and everybody just does a great job, and we win the game.
It seems fitting that Clayton Kershaw was on the mound for the Dodgers, locking up their ninth NL West title in 10 seasons. Remember last year, it went down to the wire with the San Francisco Giants, and San Francisco won the division, though lost to the Dodgers in, was that the divisional round they lost to the Dodgers? Game five, a 1-0 game. I think it was a Chris Taylor hit or something like that that gave them the winning game five in San Francisco. That was a tight series. So it won't be the Giants this year. The Padres are actually a playoff team, but they're 20 and a half games back of the Dodgers. So here's my concern about the Dodgers. And really, I said this about the Yankees earlier in the year. When you're on such a torrid pace that no one is pushing you, there's no sense of urgency. There's no adrenaline. There's no pressure, really. You're not feeling that tension in your gut that kind of prepares you for the playoffs. The teams that have to play for their postseason lives, the final month of the season, or you can really apply this to any sport. If you remember, I mean, even going back to 2019, when the Washington Nationals were 12 games below 500 in May, they had to fight and scratch and claw, and then they faced elimination a dozen different times in the playoffs. They were prepared for that because it took them every last bit of the regular season just to earn their spot in October. That's not the case for these Dodgers. And while I know they've got veterans there, like a Freddie Freeman who won the World Series last year with the Braves, like Clayton Kershaw who tosses the 7 scoreless innings last night, like Mookie Betts who won a World Series with the Red Sox. I mean, you've got veterans, but nothing else besides a World Series championship will do for these guys. They've set the bar so high. They're at 98 wins already. Their run differential is 320. They've got the best home and road records in Major League Baseball. Anything short of a World Series is failure. And yet they're not playing that kind of baseball over the last month, or really the last 2 months of the season. So that's my concern. As much as these guys have been through the fire before, it's a little bit like the Golden State Warriors going back to those days when they were trouncing the West and they weren't getting pushed and they would kind of loaf it and admit that they were bored during the regular season. They certainly could find the other gear because they knew what it took to win. So let's see if those Dodgers have that same ability to flip the switch, that proverbial switch, if you will. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. You can find me on Twitter, ALawRadio, also on our Facebook page. I'm trying to go back and answer some of your questions for Ask Amy. And as always, we have the links to our podcast, and our guests are podcasted separately. I'll tell you about our guest on tonight's show if you missed it earlier, plus Nathaniel Hackett, an about face by the Denver Broncos rookie head coach. And I'm assuming it's not because of the hot takes all over social media that the man should be fired after one game. Please make me roll my eyes. It's After Hours on a Wednesday morning. Good morning to you on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
A 64-yard field goal tried by Denver to take the lead. Ball put down, right-footed kick is away, and it is no good, wide left. And the sideline erupts for Seattle. 15 seconds to go. They'll take over.
I wasn't speechless earlier. I was just told not to speak. Right now, I'm speechless. I can't believe they took the ball out of Russell Wilson's hands to kick a 64-yard field goal to try to win this game.
Off the field, on the money, and after hours, it's time to talk football with Amy Lawrence.
Well, we've heard it over and over. You've probably seen it more than once. The decision to kick a 64-yard field goal after the Broncos let 41 seconds play off the clock without calling a timeout. They were clearly unprepared for a 4th-and-5 situation. Broncos head coach Nathaniel Hackett admitted as much, that it caught them off guard when they went from 3rd-and-14 to 4th-and-5. And then there was indecision. There was a lack of preparation. And they didn't know what to do. Ultimately, they did end up trying a 64-yard field goal instead of allowing Russell Wilson and the Broncos offense to try for the first down. I think that this was probably the, other than Dak Prescott with the fractured thumb, the most talked about moment of the entire first week of the regular season. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. That's Kurt Warner and Kevin Harlan on Westwood One. Now, after Monday Night Football, we were here. We were breaking it all down. We had a guest from Seattle, Brandon Cristal, on KOA Radio in Denver. Nathaniel Hackett said very clearly that they had confidence in their kicker, and he said they never expected to pick up as many yards as they did on third down, and they weren't prepared for fourth down. And without explicitly saying it, he didn't think that his offense could get that yardage to be able to convert the first down and get them closer to Brandon McManus's range. I mean, it was a total disaster. They really shot themselves in the foot by not calling the timeout, their first of three, to try to figure out what they were going to do. So the whole thing kind of blew up in his face, and there's been a lot of criticism of Nathaniel Hackett because he's a rookie head coach and he was seemingly unprepared. Now, I think it's ridiculous the number of people deeming him a failure, saying that he's over his skis, that he had this deer in the headlights look. Now, I mean, he's son of a coach, and he's a longtime offensive coordinator, and he earned this job with Denver because he impressed John Elway and George Payton and everything else. In that moment, he botched it royally, and he's now admitted that this wasn't the way that they should have played it. In hindsight, of course, which is 2020, on Tuesday, changing his mind about attempting an uber-long field goal.
Looking back at it, we definitely should have gone for it. Just not, you know, one of those things. You look back at it and you say, of course we should go for it. We missed the field goal. But in that situation, we had a plan. I mean, we had a plan. We knew that the 46 was the mark. We were third and 15, I think, third and 13. I'm more upset about that play before it, to lose yards, to be able to, you know, getting that there would have definitely been better to be able to call that same play and get extra yards. I think that when you sit there and say we all know he's got a big leg, you know, he's been kicking for a long time, you know, and wanted to, you know, give him that opportunity, wanted to give him a chance to be able to win the game right there. And he had the distance, just went a little bit left. And it's just one of those things. It's unfortunate, but that was our plan going into it. And, you know, obviously looking back at it, you know, if you missed the field goal, you're always going to wish you would have gone for it. And if you would have gone for it and not gotten it, you wish you would have given him a chance.
Now, see, I don't know that I agree with that. I think regardless of whether you go for it and you convert the fourth down or you don't, if you trust your quarterback and your offense, that's always the better play. Because the 64-yard field goal is not a high percentage play. It's just not. And for Brandon McManus, in Denver, maybe you're a little more confident with the thin air, but you're not nearly as confident at, it's Lumen Field now, right? You're not nearly as confident at Lumen Field with the 12th man making a ton of noise after he misfires on the first kick. Coach Hackett said he got it out of his system. What? No. That's that old adage that you use about somebody who's sucking in pregame warmups before basketball and they brick about 7 threes in a row and you say, oh, well, get all the misses out of your system. That's not actually how it works. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. So why then? Let's just to circle back one more time. Why go for the field goal instead of putting the ball in the hands of your Pro Bowl veteran QB?
We were expecting to go for it on fourth down, and then you hit the mark.
Oh, wait,
you know,
a minute.
The mark that we had all
you
set before we started.
Expecting to go for it on fourth down.
46 yards.
Okay.
Yeah, 46-yard line was where we wanted to be.
Crazy.
And we got
That's
there.
Crazy.
So we had to make the decision if we wanted to give it to Brandon, and we did. And didn't work. It sucks, but hey, that's part of it.
Just imagine, really, there's not much left to the imagination, but imagine the chaos that's going on between the sidelines where they're now scrambling to change their mind. They changed their minds. He said they were going for it on fourth down. So if it's fourth and 10, they go for it, but not if it's fourth and 5. If it's fourth and 18, they go for it. Or I guess if you think about third and 14, which was the snap before, let's just say for the sake of argument, they got no yards or 1 yard. I'm pretty sure, call me crazy, but he just said we were planning to go for it on fourth down until they got to the 46-yard mark, because that was on the fringes of McManus range. That's crazy. They actually changed their minds when they got more yards. Am I the only one that thinks that's odd? They were going to go for it on fourth down and then decided to go for a 64-yard field goal. But here, this too is why you have to look at that 30 seconds that ticked off the clock. They were so unorganized and they were so unprepared for that moment. He admitted as much that they wasted all that time. Do I think he should be fired? No. But, oh, you know what? Producer Jay, I just had a brilliant idea. Remember earlier when we played a snippet from Mike Tomlin? He was asked about his young running back, Jaylen Warren, who had to step in for Najee Harris on Sunday when Najee was knocked out of the game with a foot injury. And he said, what about Jaylen Warren?
You know, he didn't urinate down his leg, man. That's a great place to begin.
Okay. Guess who did urinate down his leg?
Nathaniel Hackett.
Yes. In a manner of speaking. I know that's icky, and I'm a girl, and I don't like to talk about bodily functions on the air, but is that, I mean, he said it first, not me. Is that appropriate? I think it is. In that moment, they botched the clock. They wasted all that time, and then after planning for a 4th and 5, they changed their minds, actually planning for a 4th and 12 or 10 or 8, they changed their minds, and a 4th and 5, they take the ball out of his hands. I just can imagine if that was still Peyton Manning, which, of course, Peyton Manning would have said, that's not happening. We're not going for the kick. He would have sent the kicker back to the sidelines. So would Tom Brady. You know, all of these guys are alpha males. Aaron Rodgers, can you imagine? No.
He's sending him right back.
Negative Ghost Rider. He is saying, get the hell off my field, is what he's saying. And it just, it was game one. It was week one. He did, in fact, urinate down his leg.
And that's capable of happening for a young guy.
Yes, in fact, that's absolutely what happened. All right, really quick, Tony's been hanging on in Idaho. Tony, save me from more of the talk about this big botched mistake. What's up?
Oh, yeah, thank you, Amy.
Mm-hmm.
I love your show.
Thank you.
God bless your producers.
Why is that? Because they have to deal with me?
No, yeah, exactly.
Gotcha. Okay, good start, Tony. Go ahead.
No, I love you.
I can hear that.
Actually, wanted to know what your opinion on the. So everyone's saying the Browns need Deshaun, right?
Well, it doesn't. And it's irrelevant.
Why is that?
It's irrelevant if they need him or not. Tony, hold on. It's irrelevant if they need him because he's not available till week 12.
Right.
Okay.
That's my point. We have so many good players on every good position, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So why are. Why is everyone discounting them?
Well, I don't know who everyone is. I'm sorry, I can't answer for everyone. I can only answer for me. I mean, it certainly is not optimal, let's be fair, to have Jacoby Brissett as your starter. That's not what the Browns were hoping when they gave Deshaun Watson all this money. They were hoping for a shorter suspension because they do believe that he's the one missing piece, that quarterback is the missing piece. And I think maybe that's where you feel like those players are getting overlooked. But it was a strong performance for the defense, the way that they had extra incentive facing Baker Mayfield Sunday, but the way they hopped on Pop, they put good pressure on the quarterback. They limited the Panthers to six offensive yards in the opening quarter and not even 100 yards in the first half. So there were a lot of positives there. Cade York, I mean, that's why they drafted him in the 4th round out of LSU, right? Because the kicker he's a great revelation, a great addition to special teams. So there are a lot of positives. They still have Kareem Hunt. He had a pair of touchdowns. Nick Chubb obviously needs to get going. There are many good things about the Browns, but we
that's
all know.
What I'm saying. No one's talking about that.
Okay, I don't think no one is. I think that's overstating it a bit, but we know quarterback is the most impactful position on the field. And with a poor quarterback performance, you can derail all of the other good stuff. The Browns nearly lost. They nearly lost.
That's very true.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, come to Idaho and get the Whitewater here.
I would love that, except I kind of feel like you started out this call by insulting me, so I don't really know why you're trying to...
No, I didn't mean that.
I'm just teasing. I don't care, Tony. Doesn't matter. Yes, definitely God bless producer Jay. I say that all the time.
Same.
He's not going to get himself out of this, is he? He's just not even interested in circling it back. No Nathaniel Hackett for Tony. All right, Tony, thank you for listening in Idaho. I'll come visit sometime.
Thank you, Emma.
You're welcome. Did I mishear him or did he just, in fact, call me Ama?
You might have, yeah.
You think I misheard him?
No, I don't think that.
God bless producer Jay. I was teasing poor Jay earlier. I mean, if he makes 5 cents an hour, I make 10 cents. So it's not like either one of us is getting rich in radio. But we have someone who's here in the control room training with producer Jay. His name is Colton. He's been helping us get audio and so far has not laughed at even one thing I've said on the air. So I'm kind of worried about I'm losing the younger generation. He's a Steelers fan, by the way. So anytime we play audio from Mike Tomlin, he's got this big grin on his face. Anyway, so we're training Colton, and by we, I mean producer Jay, and I made the joke that he should come work with us, Colton, because I bring gifts for my producers, and then I couldn't resist. I said it's because they make about 5 cents an hour, and so I feel as though I need to supplement their income. But those cute little pumpkins in there, they kind of make you feel better, right?
Yeah, they do. They've lifted my spirits tremendously this morning. Yeah.
Maybe we should post a photo of cute little pumpkins. The Browns have a brand new elf logo on their field. We have pumpkins for our mascot.
Touching
here.
The pumpkin.
Never mind. You just ruined it. You had to drop Kyrie in and ruin the whole thing. You had to, didn't you?
It's the dark side. Embrace it.
Seriously, I was having so much fun tonight, and you and the Cleveland guy just ruined it. No, and the Tony guy who just said, "God bless your producers," because they have to work with you. Do you feel that way, Jay?
No, I don't feel that way. I don't feel that. I don't feel that sentiment.
Kick saving a beauty. I love it.
I didn't put myself under the bus. He said it, not me.
Anyway, I'm a shill for pumpkin everything in the fall, and I know it's not fall, but Walmart got me because they're selling the cute little pumpkins and gourds, and I couldn't help it. So don't tell producer Jay. I bought a bag of like four of each, four of the little mini orange pumpkins and four of the striped gourds, and because I can't put them all over my house, I had to give him two. I need to get rid of a couple.
I'm going to display them in my house.
Proudly?
I think I have the perfect spot in the windowsill, very proudly.
Do you think your bulldog Moose is going to be intrigued by mini pumpkins?
He might be. I could see him kind of like sniffing it, going up to it, giving it a little
light. Do you think he might get like one of it, just like grab one and run?
No, he doesn't run. But he doesn't run. He might grab one and like kind of trot gingerly out of the area.
Well, you better be careful. You're going to track down the pumpkin stealer. And tell him, don't touch the pumpkin.
I think he'd more just go up to it out of curiosity, but I think at the end of the day, he'll leave it.
Think he'll lick the mini pumpkin?
He might. He's always looking for things that are food, so he'll give it a shot.
I'm telling you, those pumpkins are doomed. You better put them out of Moose's range.
I'll just put them like a little bit elevated, and they'll be good.
He'll never see them above his head.
No, he won't go get them.
I didn't even think about that. All right, don't touch the pumpkins. That's what we're saying for Moose Chunk.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast. You're listening to After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Firing for the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Touchdown!
Takes it himself to the pylon. Touchdown!
One man to beat 10. He's gone.
They throw in the end zone. Caught! Touchdown!
Made a guy miss. He's inside the five. He's to the 3-2-1. Touchdown!
Center zoning into the end zone. Touchdown!
The people have spoken, and one score stands above the rest. Here is your TD of the week. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Brady will go under center. First and goal from the five. Ball resting in between the hash marks. Here's the snap. Brady back. Lobs it left corner for Mike Evans. Oh, one-handed grab! Mike Evans makes the catch. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Tom Brady puts it in the air, and Mike Evans reaching up, snatches it down with one hand. The Buccaneers add to their lead.
It's rare. I mean, he's got great hands. He does one-handed catches all the time. You can look at it all the time. He practices those things, and he's got great height. He's got a great feel for the game. He's got great chemistry with Tom, and you know, they make those type of plays happen.
That is the voice of one Todd Bowles, new head coach or promoted head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I keep reminding myself, it's a little odd not to see Bruce Arians, but Todd getting his second chance at coaching, and it helps when you've got Tom Brady to ease the transition along with Mike Evans. I've said this for years, 3 years actually. I'm now saying it about Julio as well. I'm so glad for Mike Evans to have this opportunity to develop a rapport and a connection with Tom Brady because it's changed his career. He was already amazing. I mean, he was good. He was one of the best in the league, but how often did he have an exceptional quarterback who would look for him and who would appreciate his talents. And he and Tom Brady have elevated Mike Evans' game together. So it's been awesome to watch. And of course, now has a Super Bowl ring to go with it. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks for voting for TD of the Week. You all sent in hundreds of votes between Twitter and Facebook. Did I just say Twinter? I think I might have.
I think you might have.
Huh. It's the Hump Show. All of my dumb words and created words can be excused, I suppose, although you're welcome to laugh at them as long as you like. Twitter and Facebook, and you said that it was Mike Evans with the one-handed grab, the only touchdown on Sunday Night Football over, what was the second highest? Shoot, remind me. That's right, it was Justin Jefferson, his second touchdown for the Vikings that he was torching the Green Bay Packers. So we'll do that TD of the week on Monday night into Tuesday every week during the NFL season. And pretty soon we're going to introduce a new feature called Defense Wins Championships. We're actually really excited about this because it's not fair that the defense gets overlooked. And you know, life is anything but fair. It's time to say,